When Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, justice, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. And blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. And yes, blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, for great is your reward in the kingdom of heaven, because in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you." This is how Jesus begins his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5. "I've been told one of the secrets to a good sermon is to begin with something unexpected, a surprise that captures the audience's attention and indicates that what follows will not be business as usual." And that's what Jesus is doing in this opening section of the Sermon on the Mount, where he casts a vision for what it means to embrace his particular vision of the kingdom of God coming into the world by pledging allegiance to him and following him as a disciple. He opens with 8 or 9, depending on how you count them, blessings, also known as the Beatitudes, which is just a fancy religious way of saying the blessings. And the first word in each of Jesus' statements in Matthew chapter 5 is notoriously difficult to translate into the English language. There's no good, perfect way to do it. Most scholars would say the best of the less than perfect ways of doing it is to say blessed. But it could also be happy. Happy are those who mourn. Or perhaps fortunate. Fortunate are the meek. Or maybe flourishing. Flourishing are those who are persecuted. Or maybe congratulations. Congratulations to the poor in spirit, the pure in heart. I like congratulations best because it captures the radical nature of Jesus' description of what life in the kingdom of God is like. And what I want to do this morning is make several observations about what exactly Jesus is doing when he opens his famous sermon with these now familiar blessings. They weren't familiar back then, but they've become familiar to us. My first observation is simply this. First and foremost, these blessings are announcements of good news. This is good news from Jesus. Because in each declaration, in each announcement, Jesus identifies a specific group of people who are promised some kind of blessing. Most of them are in the future tense. Two of them are present tense, but most of them are future tense. Here's something that's coming for this group of people. That's why they're blessed. That's why they are to be congratulated. The Beatitudes are a combination of blessing and promise, not commands. They are not ethical commands. They are not new laws from Jesus we're supposed to obey. You don't obey a promise. You don't obey a blessing. Jesus isn't telling us to become poor in spirit as if we could somehow go out and intentionally achieve low self-esteem. He's not saying we have to mourn even when we don't feel sad. Not telling us, now, go be a knucklehead, get yourself persecuted, and then wear it as a badge of honor, as an entrance requirement into the kingdom. It's not the way these Beatitudes work. Jesus is describing reality from God's perspective. He's not telling us what we have to do to enter the kingdom of heaven. He's describing the kind of people who are already in the kingdom of heaven. And the kind of people he describes would not have been considered blessed or flourishing or happy in the ancient world. They wouldn't be considered blessed or flourishing or happy in today's world. The kind of people Jesus describes in the Beatitudes who are receiving this good news are the last, the least of these that Jesus says now are first in the kingdom of heaven. So, first and foremost, before there anything else, remember this about the Beatitudes. They are Jesus rolling out the red carpet for the nobodies of the world who are now somebodies to be celebrated and congratulated in the kingdom of heaven. So that's first. But there's more going on than just this announcement of good news. That's enough, but there's more because these announcements are also an invitation to draw near to Jesus. They're not commands, but they are invitations. They're an invitation for self-assessment, because how can we read or hear these blessings without asking ourselves, is Jesus describing me? Where do I fit in that list of those who are blessed? Do I even want to fit in that list of those who are blessed? Am I prepared? Am I ready to live in the kind of world Jesus is describing where those are the kind of people who are happy and fortunate and flourishing? Do I want to be in that world, or am I standing on the outside of the blessing? And therein lies the invitation. It's implied. This is an imperfect illustration. It will fall apart if we push it too far, like all good illustrations do. They eventually can't hold their weight. But I hope this will help us understand how Beatitudes are designed to work. Here's a Beatitude I wrote this week. Blessed is my soon-to-be 16-year-old son, for I will give him my pickup truck. Well, why is he blessed? Is he blessed because he's soon to be 16? Maybe. There's some blessing there. Is he blessed because he's my son? Yes. I'm describing who he is. Did he do anything to become my son? No. Has he really achieved anything by become almost 16 years old? Not really. It's who he is. He has an identity, and there's a promise associated. Because he is my soon to be 16-year-old son, I'm going to give him my pickup truck. Is there a command in this blessing? I don't see one. I wrote it. I don't see a command. Is it conditional upon anything that my son must do to receive the truck other than staying alive until he turns 16, which when you're 15 is iffy? No. So where's the invitation? The invitation is if you're soon to be 16 and you're about to receive a pickup truck, the invitation is learn to drive. Learn to drive, lean into, live into this promise of receiving a truck so that you're ready to live in the world you will be in when you turn 16 and receive a new truck. You're blessed because you're going to receive a truck. Do you know how to drive? Are you ready for it? Live into that promise by becoming someone who's ready to receive it. That's sort of how these Beatitudes function as invitations. Now, one other clarification. This is just a sermon illustration. When he turns 16, he's not touching my truck. Just an illustration, folks. In the Beatitudes, Jesus is describing the kind of people who are drawn to him. He's describing the kind of people who feel at home in the kingdom of heaven. He's also describing the kind of people we can expect to become if we draw near to Jesus, if we follow him and devote ourselves to being his disciples. Because Jesus, the one we follow, embodies all of these blessings. He is poor in spirit. He is brokenhearted. He mourns the brokenness of the world. He is meek and humble and doesn't use coercive power to get what he wants. He embodies these blessings so that if we as his disciples expect to become like the one we follow, we can expect to become more and more like the people he describes in these Beatitudes the longer we follow him. And we don't become like these people by focusing on the blessings themselves, treating them like commands to be obeyed. We become these kind of people by following Jesus, by learning from Jesus. An example, Jesus says, blessed are those who mourn. Does that mean we're supposed to force ourselves to be sad? No, it means as we follow Jesus, we develop his heart and we begin to see the world through his eyes. And as we develop the vision of Jesus and as we develop the heart of Jesus, we will mourn the brokenness we see all around us. How can we not? Blessed are those who mourn because they have the heart of Christ. And they see the world the way Jesus does, and they know ultimate comfort can only come from God. So this is good news. It's good news of blessing for those who are described, but it's also an invitation, especially for those of us who maybe don't quite feel at home in this kind of world, to draw near to Jesus so that we then can learn, so that we can prepare, so that we can become the kind of people who feel at home in this world, which means that as we draw near to Jesus and we become more like Jesus, then there are also invitations to join Jesus in turning the world upside down. These Beatitudes are an invitation from Jesus to join him in something like Bizarro World. I first learned about the concept of the Bizarro World from an old Seinfeld episode. Only it wasn't an old Seinfeld episode when I learned about it. It was a brand new Seinfeld episode 20 years ago. Now it's old. And Seinfeld learned it from Superman. And in the Superman comics, Bizarro World is this realm where everything is flipped. Everything's turned upside down. Everything functions in an opposite way from what you would normally expect. Sounds a lot like the kingdom of God to me, where Jesus says, the first will be last, and the last will be first. And so in the Beatitudes, Jesus is inviting us to join him in Bizarro World, where everything is flipped, where Jesus turns conventional wisdom upside down. Because what we see in the Beatitudes is Jesus's vision, his definition of flourishing, what it means to be a human being flourishing in this world, his definition of flourishing is radically different from the definition of flourishing according to conventional wisdom. Because conventional wisdom, the wisdom of our world says this, flourishing are those who are independently wealthy. How blessed you are if you have enough resources to take care of yourself when you get in trouble. You don't have to ask for help. You don't have to depend on anyone or anything else. You have everything you need. You're self-contained. That's flourishing. That's the good life. Jesus says, flourishing are the poor in spirit who have lost everything, who have no resources of their own, and all they can do is depend on God for salvation. That's the good life, according to Jesus. Conventional wisdom says, flourishing are those who have the power, who have the strength, who are aggressive and bold enough to go out and get what they want and force reality to bend to their will. And Jesus says, flourishing are the meek, the humble, the lowly, the little ones who either don't have or choose not to use force or coercive power to get what they want, but they trust God to give it to them in due time. They're the ones who ultimately inherit the earth, not the strong and the bold and the aggressive. Conventional wisdom says, flourishing are those who settle for nothing but the best. Oh, they're blessed because they demand excellence from themselves and everyone around them. They do not tolerate failure or mistakes. Jesus says, flourishing are the merciful. For those who keep putting up with and loving and forgiving those who can never quite get it right, who are always making a mess. The kingdom of God is not built on excellence or perfection. It's built on mercy. Conventional wisdom says, flourishing are the popular, are those whom everyone likes. No one ever says anything bad about you. That means you're blessed. Jesus says, flourishing are those who are persecuted and insulted and accused and excluded because of me and my teachings. That's the path to the good life according to Christ. Now, what this means then, as we follow Jesus and as we become more like him and the virtues that he describes in the Beatitudes are more a part of our heart, and we begin to embody those, what this means is our very presence in the world serves as a prophetic witness against conventional wisdom. It means as we become a community shaped by these blessings, our presence as disciples of Christ in this world challenges the way the normal world works because our community is not built on conventional wisdom. It's not built on the best practices from corporate America. It's built upon Jesus' vision of the way the world really works in the kingdom of God. See, the Beatitudes are not harmless poetry. They're not refrigerator magnets. They are revolutionary, radical declarations from the Son of God that the dominion of darkness will not last forever. That the reign of God is breaking into this world. It's coming, and in fact, it's already here through the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And it's manifesting itself in the presence of Jesus' disciples who gather together in congregations like this. Which means these blessings, they're good news. They're invitations to draw near to Jesus and be more like Jesus. They're invitations to join Jesus in turning the world upside down, which means that these blessings are also an invitation to a risky way of life. They are not safe. They are risky. And this risky way of life is none other than the way of the cross. This is how Dietrich Bonhoeffer summarizes his discussion of the Beatitudes in his classic book, The Cost of Discipleship. He says, having reached the end of the Beatitudes, we naturally ask if there is any place on this earth for the community which they describe. Clearly, there is one place and only one, and that is where the poorest, meekest, and most sorely tried of all men is to be found. On the cross at Golgotha. The fellowship of the Beatitudes is the fellowship of the crucified. With him, it has lost all, and with him, it has found all. From the cross, there comes the call, blessed, blessed. And Jesus doesn't try to hide or shy away or back off this vision and this reality and this outcome of what it means to live into this vision of the kingdom of God. Two of the nine blessings he announces have to do with being persecuted, with being insulted, with being misunderstood, with being mistreated. He's preparing his disciples. He's preparing us. If you're going to follow me, understand I'm going to get you in trouble. Because this is an upside down way of living and it is risky. And this reinforces the radical nature of Jesus' vision and Jesus' ministry. Jesus was not crucified because everything he said and did made sense to everyone. They don't execute teachers of wisdom who show up and reinforce what everybody already knows. They kill the ones whose vision, whose way of life, whose ethic undermines the powerful, whose kingdoms are built on conventional wisdom. They nail those kind of teachers, those kind of messiahs, those kind of leaders to a cross. And so, to respond to this invitation from Jesus and to live into this kingdom vision that's coming and that's already here is risky business. It requires something of us. To follow Jesus and become like him and turn the world upside down means risking being gentle in a violent world. It means risking being kind and merciful in a competitive culture. It means risking being sincere and open and honest in a cynical age. And yes, it means risking loving our enemies who wish us harm. Why would we dare take such risks? Why would we even contemplate living this way? Because this is the way of Christ. Because these are the very risks Jesus took as the Son of God. And he both told and then showed us that this risky path, the way of the cross, ultimately leads to the good life. It's the secret to human flourishing. And only those who come close enough to him to hear what he says and believe it and trust it and do it ever really see what he sees. And so for those of us this morning who need to hear these blessings as good news, may we hear them as good news, as blessings, the down and out or the up and in. May we also hear in these blessings an invitation from Jesus to challenge the world and to risk everything for him. And may we trust that the one we follow, whose spirit is working in us to make us more like him, may we trust that we will become more like him. In life, in death, and in the resurrection. Because this is how the kingdom of God comes into the world and turns it upside down. Let those who have the ears to hear receive the gospel this morning.